Audio Jungle.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for taking the time to listen to the Sean's Tour Sports Podcast, whether you're watching it on YouTube or on Rumble or listening it on the audio version. Now, this is the first episode of the Sean's Tour Sports Podcast on April Fool's Day on 586 Sports. As you can see, if you are looking at the logo, this is like a totally new logo. So the topics for this episode will be recap of the Elite Eight, what's happening with the Indiana Hoosiers basketball team, recap of week one of the UFL, United Football League, and Mike Wilbon, a part of the eruption, is criticizing the sports media and find out why. Now, before I begin, let me by first saying this. Now, I know that we are getting closer to the text deadline, which is April 15th. So if you are a new TurboTax customer and you click the link in the box description below, and you will save 20% on taxes. So make sure that you read the terms and conditions before signing up, because most people, when they sign up, they don't usually read stuff. So it's very important to read it before you actually sign it. All right. So I am going to be drinking a Arizona tea, by the way, because usually when it's like hot, or usually when I talk a lot, my mouth usually be dry. Okay, so there we go. All right. So now let's get it. So I did watch the Elite Eight this past weekend, and I actually liked it because, you know, you actually had two games that were actually close. I would expect Texas Tech to lose to a close game against Florida by 5 points, and that makes it even better. I was playing Splash Sports against the spread, and I actually had four picks right, all those picks right. So Duke beat the brakes out of Alabama, and if you look at the box score between Alabama and Duke, now in a defensive rebound, Duke had 34 while Alabama had 20. Alabama was not good with three-pointers, field goal. Alabama was like shooting 35.4%. Now, Alabama did have three people score double digits, while Duke had four players that scored double digits. Kahan Maluk scored 14. Cooper Flagg had 16. Tyrese Proctor had 17. Con Kupel had 21. Then you had Tennessee versus Houston on Sunday. And I don't know what the heck happened with Tennessee. I thought this game was going to be close between the two. Now, Tennessee, if you look at the box score, they were like 15 out of 52 from shooting, 5 out of 29 for 3. 75% from the free throw. They also had 9 turnovers. And Houston only shot 4 free throws the entire game and was 100%. Houston almost led in every category except for personal fouls. Houston had committed 16 while Tennessee had 9. Then you also had Michigan State versus Auburn. I knew this game was going to be close as expected. Both teams made 3-pointers 7 times. Michigan State was 81% from the free throw line. Both teams had 5 blocks. Both teams did struggle on the turnovers. Jaden Atkins scored 15. Jace Richardson scored 11. And Jackson Collar scored 11 for Michigan State. Then you look at Auburn. Johnny Broom was playing like an NBA caliber basketball player because he had a double-double. He had 25 points, 14 rebounds, and 2 assists. And then Tahai Pettifer scored 10 points. And those were the only two players that actually scored double digits. And you'd be like, wow, amazing. So Saturday, it will be the Final Four. It is the second time that all number one seeds are playing each other, are playing like that since 2008. I remember that the last time that ever happened. I was a junior in high school. That's how far. So I remember it was North Carolina, UCLA, Kansas, and Memphis. Of course, that was Derrick Rose's only year at Memphis. So Saturday, it will be the Final Four. It is the second time that all number one seeds are playing each other. for the first time since 2008. So Florida will face Auburn, as Florida is a 2.5 favorite. That game will start at 6:09. And Houston versus Duke. Duke is a 4.5 favorite. That game will be at 8:49 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So both of those games will be on CBS, including the national championship next Monday. So here's another story. So we also got to look at the Indiana Hoosiers basketball team. I drink a green tea. So it has been since March 13th that the Hoosiers have played basketball, as they were eliminated by Oregon in the Big Ten tournament in the second round. So the Hoosiers finished the season with a 19-13 record, 10-10 in Big Ten conference play. Mike Woodson retired, and out of nowhere, the Indiana Hoosiers players went to the transfer portals. So there are no players from 2024 and 25 season are scheduled to return. Now, Devarian DeVries' first season, as I'm looking into this, Gabe Cups. Now, he went to going to Ohio State, while everybody else either went to the transfer portal or graduated. So Nick Norton will join DeVries' staff as an assistant coach. Ryan Hoare will join the staff as strength and conditioning coach. Now, both work with DeVries at West Virginia and at Drake. Norton played for DeVries for one season at Drake. Now, according to the Indianapolis Star, reported on Monday that Drew Adams, a member of the Cincinnati Bearcats staff, is also expected to be joining the staff. Hoosiers on Sports Illustrated could not confirm that. So the Adams situation is expected, along with Norton. Adams accompanied DeVries to the Indiana High School Association Championship game on Saturday in Indianapolis. Now, Norton did play for DeVries at Drake, starting all 14 games he played in 2018-2019 before he tore his ACL in his knee and in his career. Norton did average 14 points, 5.9 assists, and 4.1 rebounds for the Bulldogs before his injury. Now, he did transfer to Drake from UAB, where he averaged 8.9 points over four seasons for the Blazers. Now, Norton briefly played in the NBA G League before he embarked on his coaching career. Now Norton joined DeVries' staff at Drake starting with 2021-22 season. He was assistant director of operations before he was promoted to director of operations for the 2022-23 season. By Norton's final season on the Drake coaching staff, he was an assistant coach director of player development, the same title he had when he followed DeVries to West Virginia for the 24-25 season. And he was the first assistant coach hired by DeVries at West Virginia as director of player development. One of Norton's primary roles is to identify talent, a very important job given to fill that roster via transfer portal. So his father is actually the women's basketball coach at UAB. Now, Horn has worked with DeVries since 2022 when he joined Drake's staff as assistant athletic director of sports performance. He was with DeVries at Drake from 2022-24 before he went to DeVries to West Virginia. Now, Horn went home to West Virginia when he followed DeVries to Morgantown. That is an Inwood, West Virginia native, as Horn is. So prior to his association with DeVries, Horn worked in strength and conditioning or in athletics performance at Wichita State, Wake Forest, Tulsa, and VCU. VCU means Virginia Commonwealth University, for those that don't know that. Now, Horn will replace Cliff Marshall, who has been Indiana's director of athletic performance since 2017. Marshall worked for head coaches Archie Miller and Mike Woodson. Now, since 2000, I found this out. Indiana has five head coaches since Bob Knight got fired. And it seems that when they hire a head coach, they can never get it right. Now, Michigan had John Beilein, Juwan Howard, and Dusty May has took Michigan to the Sweet 16. Purdue, Illinois has gotten it right in the regular season, but disappointed in the tournament, even though Purdue did win to the national championship the past season, not this season, but the past season. So I wish the best for DeVarian DeVries for his head coaching duties at Indiana, because it is going to be a lot of work to do. Okay. So we got that out the way for the college basketball. Now we're going to the UFL. Now, those of you have not known, the UFL started their week one Friday night. So first game of the UFL was the St. Louis Battlehawks versus the Houston Roughnecks. Now, last season, Houston was 1-9 in the UFL. St. Louis has a new quarterback, Manny Wilkins, the successor of A.J. McCarron. Now, Wilkins completed 17 out of 22 passes for 189 yards, 43 rushing yards, 2 touchdowns, and 8 carries for the Battlehawks. Jacob Sailors had 98 yards and a touchdown on 60 carries, while Javarian Howard went for 115 yards on 13 carries, most of which came on a 74-yard touchdown run in the fourth quarter. So I turned that game off. I was busy watching Sweet 16. So according to Mike Mitchell, you can actually follow him on X, Friday's night game between St. Louis Battlehawks and Houston Roughnecks averaged 690,000 viewers. That telecast peaked at 844,000 viewers. Then on Saturday, you had the San Antonio Brahmins versus Arlington Renegades. That was another blowout. Kalen Badge had 110 yards, including a 77-yard rushing touchdown, and he actually set the new UFL record, while fellow back Devian Smith, who used to play for Michigan, totaled 3 more touchdowns. Then Sunday, you had the Michigan Panthers versus the Showboats. Now, the Panthers scored 3 touchdowns. By the way, I am wearing a Michigan Panthers shirt, by the way, for those of you watching it on video. Now, the Panthers scored 3 points on their first drive. They extended it in like 10-0 early in the second quarter. Now, on the fourth and goal, Bryce Perkins, we posted that video on Instagram and X. You can check that out on the 586 Sports X and Instagram. So on the fourth and goal, what he did was Bryce Perkins fumbled the ball, recovered the ball, and claw his way into the end zone for the score. And then after 2 consecutive 3 and outs, Memphis were able to get on the board with a field goal midway through the second quarter. Matt Cullen nailed the 50-yarder to end the shutout. That was like a 1-score game. Now, last season, UFL kickers made 83% of the total field goal last season and finished 63.4 from 50-plus yards. Now, Michigan had 2 prime chances to extend their lead late in the first half, but came up short both times. Now, they did get an interception that put them in Showboats territory. A 7-yard sack on 2nd and 5 from the Showboats 34-yard line led to a punt with 1:16 remaining in the half. Now, Panthers got the ball back after forcing a 3-and-out, taking over at his own 27-yard line. Only needed a few plays to get to Memphis 40-yard line, but BT Potter missed a 59-yard field goal as time expired to keep the score 10-3. Showboats were able to get Michigan off the field quickly on the opening drive on the first half, getting the ball back at his own 25-yard line. Former Panthers quarterback E.J. Perry threw for 29 yards, while Derek Prince rushed for 17 yards to help the Showboats set up a 45-yard field goal that cut the Panthers' lead to 10-6 with 8:15 left in the third quarter. Now, Panthers were able to find the scoreboard again late in the third quarter after the Showboats made it a 10-6 game. Bryce Perkins led the Packers on a 9-play, 65-yard drive that ended with him throwing a 25-yard touchdown to Samson Nakua that gave them a 17-6 lead with 3:47 remaining in the fourth quarter. Following their touchdown in the third, Panthers only allowed the Showboats to reach the 50 before forcing a punt. Now, once the Panthers got the ball back, it won on a methodical drive. It picked up yards in bunches, moving the ball forward on all but one play to pick up 4 first downs on a 13-play, 66-yard drive that took 7:05. The drive didn't end in a touchdown, but the Panthers kicked the field goal to go up 20-6 with 7:52 remaining. Now, after penalties and review, Memphis finally found the end zone when E.J. Perry threw for a 6-yard touchdown pass to John Adams. Memphis went for 2, but didn't get that. That failed, making it 20-12 game. Now, Memphis were finally able to get the ball moving deep down the field late in the fourth quarter after the Panthers took a 26 lead. Memphis went on a 14-play, 73-yard drive. Denerick Prince made the big play of the possession, slipping out of a tackle to turn a short catch into a 24-yard gain to put Memphis at Michigan's 5-yard line. Now, Memphis tried an alternate kickoff, but it failed incomplete. They still got a chance to tie the game. The Panthers kicker Bete Potter missed a 50-yard field goal with 51 seconds left. Now, on the first play with the ball back, Showboats quarterback Troy Williams completed the pass to Jonathan Adams that went for a 38-yard gain on the next play. Panthers defensive back Kai Nakua intercepted Williams' pass and returned it 80-yard pick six to make it a 26-12 game. That ended the Showboats' comeback bid. And I'm happy that the Michigan Panthers won that game. And last but not least, the defending champs, the Birmingham Stallions, went on to the nation's capital to face the D.C. Defenders. Now, Ricky Pearson Jr. fumbled on the game's opening possession while trying to pick up a first down on a 4th-and-1 carry. The Defenders were able to kick a field goal on the ensuing drive, taking an early 3-0 lead. The Stallions responded with a field goal on their own. They made it a 3-0 game roughly halfway through the first quarter. Now, after the Defenders took a 6-3 lead in the first quarter with their second field goal of the day, the Stallions responded with a score that gave them the lead. Running back C.J. Marble took a screen pass 12 yards for a touchdown before the Stallions scored a 2-point try to go up 11-6 in the first minute of the second quarter. Now, the Defenders were trying to cut into the Stallions' lead in the late stages of the second half when they were facing a 3rd-and-11 with 3:16 remaining at the Stallions' 30-yard line. Jordan Tumwo's screen pass was picked. The Defenders were able to redeem themselves right before halftime. Jordan Tumwo strung together an impressive drive, which ended him throwing an 8-yard pass to Chris Rowland for a touchdown that gave him a 12-11 lead with 8 seconds remaining in the first half. They were not able to convert on the ensuing try. Now, the Defenders punted after 5 plays on the ensuing drive. They wound up with the ball again not long after 3 plays into the next possession. McGoe's deep pass was intercepted by DC cornerback DeAndre Baker. That play gave the Defenders the ball at their own 22-yard line with just over 4 minutes remaining in the third quarter. Now, Birmingham were able to get to midfield on their first possession of the second half, but went the wrong way. Quarterback Alex McGoe took a 6-yard loss on 2nd-and-6 before tripping while scrambling on 3rd for a 18-yard loss. The Defenders added another field goal early in the fourth quarter, make it 15-11. Defenders made it 7-point game, 18-11, with a 50-plus-yard field goal late in the final frame. Birmingham now has many losses in 2025 as they did last year. So right now, the second week will begin on April the 4th. Now, last but not least, I actually looked this article while I was watching College Basketball Sunday. Now, this article is from Bobby Burek from Outkick. Now, if you have not gotten the chance to read this article, I recommend you reading it. That's on outkick.com. So what he did was he interviewed with Mike Wilbon, who is the host of Pardon the Interruption, along with Tony Kornheiser. That show has been around since I was in elementary school, 2001. That was a year before they had the NBA rights from NBC. So according to Bobby Burek of Outkick, James has been the subject of more coverage this year from ESPN and Fox Sports 1 than all NBA first team Oklahoma City Thunder point guard Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Well, which is true, but the difference is when I look at ESPN and Fox is this. ESPN is more about highlights, while Fox Sports 1 gives you and they talk about other subjects as well. That's why I've been watching Fox Sports 1 ever since it broadcast to air. And I got to tell you, I hardly ever watch a show on ESPN. So during a conversation with ESPN's Mike Wilbon, the longtime co-host of the worldwide leader's beloved Pardon the Interruption, Burak brought up this stat. Quote, "I didn't even think about that. It's true," Wilbon said. "They talk about him more than Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. That's pandering. It's all pandering. Let me be clear. Our business, sports media is a piece of S blank, blank, blank a lot of days. Now, Wilbon went on to call out the modern sports world approach to gathering and digesting news. There is no, quote, there is nobody enforcing standards or having tough conversation, Wilbon elaborated. This is what happens when you no longer have functioning newsrooms because everyone is working from hotel rooms, from their bedrooms, and maybe even from their beds. Podcast, especially bloggers, by the way. People are not in newsrooms anymore or a studio where you can call them out on their BS. That's a problem. Close quote. Well, that's true. And by the way, Mike Wilbon has used to work for the Washington Post. So, and Kornheiser, they both work for the Washington, used to work for the Washington Post. Wilbon was careful to not personally put down Bronny James' performance or LeBron James' handling of his son's rookie season. He went so far as to point out that he and his PTI co-host, Tony Kornheiser, have avoided covering the Bronny drama at the level of the ESPN colleagues. Quote, but again, I was not critical of LeBron as a dad at all, Wilbon said. Nobody's not criticized LeBron as a father. Quote, I feel differently about this than most. I get it. However, Tony and I didn't need to talk about it publicly. Tony understands it too. His son Michael works for him, but we aren't talking about Bronny every day. Hell no. Close quote. So this year, Bronny has averaged 21.9 points on 4-4-3, 380, 815 shooting splits, 5.3 rebounds, 5.3 assists, and 1.9 steals in 11 regular games with South Bay. That's the NBA G League team. That's the kind of superlative output NBA caliber players produce at the NBA G League level and points to a brighter future. So there's a few people who work in mainstream media will call out the so-called media. And I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised how Mike Wilbon called it, because right now we are living in the era where people are into clicks and bait, not actual journalism or like actual breakdowns and stuff like that. So like, I do not like debate shows. I want to say that right now. I used to like debate shows, but now I don't like it. It's the same topic. They don't talk about anything else, you know. And ESPN hardly ever talk about UFC or any other sport, and they hardly ever talk about UFL. And only time ESPN will talk about a sport is as they got the rights to it. Now I remember like when ESPN didn't have hockey, ESPN didn't bother covering it. And this so-called network supposed to be the world like leader in sports, but apparently they want to be, and they're very selective. So I have not watched SportsCenter in like 16 years, because my thing is like, I can watch the highlights. You know, it's already in my face. You know what I mean? So what's the point? Well, that is it. So also, I also do props, by the way. I also do props on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday. I may do a UFL prop on Friday. I may do a UFL, more likely I'll do a UFL prop on Friday, because they do UFL games on Friday nights on Fox. So that is it. So take care, and you guys have a nice and wonderful week. Take care.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to the Sean Stewart Sports Podcast. Make sure that you not only hit the subscribe button for future episodes, but also give us a star rating. Thank you. Audio Jungle.